from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. This is the Chancellor's Report, featuring Mark Monet, Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Here's your host, WUWM General Manager John Hess.
Welcome to the UWM Chancellor's Report. I'm your host, WUWM's General Manager John Hess. On today's Chancellor's Report, we'll talk with UWM Chancellor Mark Monet and our special guests, Danae Davis, Milwaukee Succeeds Executive Director, Tim Sheehy, President, Metropolitan Milwaukee Association of Commerce, and Julia Taylor, President of the Greater Milwaukee Committee. On today's program, we'll discuss how UWM and its partners in the Milwaukee area are dealing with the effects of COVID-19 and how they're creating plans to safely reopen the city. As we tape this on June 2nd, we'll also address how the recent unrest in the city and surrounding communities are affecting UWM and Milwaukee's rebound from the COVID-19 pandemic. Mark, Danae, Tim, and Julia, nice to have you with us today. And because of social distancing protocols, all of us are participating in this interview remotely. First, Mark, I'd like to talk a little bit about the COVID-19 big picture. And obviously, it's dramatic disruption on life as we have known it here in Milwaukee. How has the pandemic impacted the Milwaukee region? And Mark, let's start with you to talk a little bit about how that's affected UWM.
Thanks, John. Great to be here. There's no question the disruption to higher education has been monumental. We had to flip our classrooms essentially overnight, put 7,300 sections online, finished the semester off, and we're able to continue people's progress toward degree completion. Right now, we look at the fall with great uncertainty on many fronts. There's so many different aspects of this, and of course, they've all been conditioned by a lot of the larger societal contextual things going on right now. In other words, higher ed isn't alone here. We've got issues in society, we've got issues on the streets, we've got issues in the business world and everywhere else that are going on right now. So our planning is intense, and we hope by June 15th to be able to tell you just exactly how we will be open, what modality we're using, how much face-to-face, how much online. Those are some of the big questions. There's obviously a lot of questions around the financials, which has been a huge impact for higher ed, as everybody else has experienced. We're in the mode right now of having put about 600 people on what we call a position-specific furlough. We've also started this month with everybody that is not on a position-specific furlough going into at least some level of furlough and some pay reduction. So a lot of impact.
Today, how has Milwaukee Succeeds been dealing with this?
You know, it's been in some ways such a whirlwind. It has revealed, that is the pandemic in Milwaukee and this region, has revealed to Milwaukee Succeeds, which is a collective impact that's primarily been focused on educational outcomes, improvement of them from birth to young adults. And as the issues have glaringly revealed themselves as a result of the pandemic and how it impacts our young people, their families, and particularly the priorities that we have set as part of our work, it reveals some huge disparities that are very consistent with our commitment to having racial equity at the center of our work. So in some cases and in some ways, the opportunity to actually be more relevant to how we eliminate disparities, both in K-12, in access to childcare, in successful life options for young people, particularly for Black and brown young people in this community, the opportunities are just literally hitting us in the face. So we have pivoted our work from how we were strategically going to operate around early childhood and ninth grade on track as a high school completion strategy to one in which we are facilitating civic response teams who are using collective impact tools combined with the urgency of those matters to really try to bring home results that don't further distance success based on race and other factors.
And Tim, how has the business community in Milwaukee reacted to this?
Well, I think like everyone else in the community, they're trying to balance safety, health, community, and economy as they make decisions about rebuilding their businesses, about rebounding from COVID, and then trying to revitalize their future. And just to put a number on this, between March and April of this year, we lost 108,000 jobs. That's almost a little over 12% of our workforce. So that's devastating in a very short period of time. And little of that, quite frankly, has to do with, you know, government intervention or safer at home. It really has to do with employee and consumer confidence. And we've been doing extensive polling throughout this. And just as recently as a couple days ago, 72% of those we polled are still concerned about getting COVID or having somebody very close to them get COVID. So that translates into only 49% of the workforce wanting to go back to work in their workplaces, and even fewer, 23% or 21%, who want to travel or go out to a restaurant. So it's having all sorts of impacts throughout the business community and the economy, and something that, quite frankly, we've never seen before.
And Julia Taylor, as president of the Greater Milwaukee Committee, how has this affected the overall Milwaukee outlook for the future and some of the plans for the future for Milwaukee?
Some of the smaller businesses and organizations in the community that we work with closely, we've had several programs, including Scale Up and Spark, that deal with mid-sized and very small businesses, many of whom are located as well in areas that are also getting impacted, not just by the pandemic, but by the protests. And we also have worked a lot with a number of community organizing groups. So it's been a very difficult time, I would say, in terms of trying to help groups learn new ways to do outreach in a community that is very relationship-based, as well as you know, working with some very, some cases, very new businesses. Brew City Match launched 56 new businesses in the first quarter of 2020. And so with LISC and the other partners, working with them, with those businesses to, you know, help get grants put together all the small loan packages we can to keep them going because they don't have a balance sheet. And yet these are the types of businesses that are very important to the revitalization of neighborhoods, the neighborhoods they're in. So it's been, like I said, it's been an interesting process. We've also worked a lot to respond to places like in Sherman Park, where some of the community organizers there have talked about the lack of PPE equipment just in the neighborhood and then highly impacted neighborhoods. So I think a lot of our work has been trying to figure out how to strengthen supply lines and the communication lines.
You know, it's a good segue there into talking about the economic turmoil that the COVID-19 has had on Milwaukee, and then also the social unrest that we've been seeing in the last couple of days in the community. Mark, let's talk a little bit about how you're preparing students to come back into the classroom and come back not only just in the wake of COVID, but also the wake of the some of the issues we've had in the community.
Thank you, John. You know, I want to reflect on we're the most diverse four-year public institution in the state in terms of campuses. And this is a critically important issue, as Danae pointed out earlier, when you have the disparities that are so clearly exposed because of the pandemic, the inequalities that we've seen in the community and just what the disproportionate impact has been in terms of health and economic factors. So we're quite sensitive to this. And we know that we've got, first of all, as Tim pointed out, the physical safety issues are paramount. So on that front, having you know, everybody off campus, both our employees, who are quite diverse, as well as our students, and making sure that we're doing everything we can. We still have about 900 people out of our 4,000 employees who are authorized to be on campus in some form, shape, or another. So making sure that we do the right things in terms of social distancing, sanitizing, and social distance PPE types of things. The next area is around the types of support that we provide. I mentioned earlier how we flipped the classes. But we now have telehealth We have created a virtual student union. We have a lot of our advising that is done remotely. We're reaching out to students to give both technology and to give financial aid for rent, for food. We've got a food pantry that we've expanded. We've given hundreds of bags of food away to individuals who are food insecure, of which we have an awful lot in our population here, unfortunately. So we're trying to provide a lot of different support virtually, doing a lot that we can in person, and having significant fundraising. I've started a campaign that is both based on scholarship support, but also immediate needs, 50% for each. And so we're really addressing that as well. We also, specific to a lot of the issues that there's so much unrest around in terms of what we see with right now, a lot of the protests, which we are so supportive of in terms of the peaceful statements in support of Black lives, in support of not just students, but all individuals of color. It's so important. And so we have been accelerating our work around care, respect, and expression in terms of how we communicate and reach out. Our diversity, equity, and inclusion framework has a number of different components, including an appointment that I'll be making to the cabinet that I've made that will be public starting July 1st. We sent a group of 20 individuals to USC's program for race, ethnicity, equity programs, and we have a number of recommendations that are coming forward that we're implementing. So those will all be laid out to try to make our campus as welcoming and supportive as we possibly can be. So those are some of the areas we're trying to help those that are impacted.
So, Danae, can you talk a little bit about, I mean, I'm sure some of these are similar, but they're also different when you're preparing those K through 12 students to come back into the classroom?
As I mentioned previously, and sort of to piggyback on Chancellor Mullin's comment, our focus on high school completion and with a particular focus on ninth grade on track revealed, and with a focus on Black and brown young males to be even more targeted, based on tons of data that says that successfully transitioning ninth to 10th grade with all the credits needed has a huge impact on the likelihood of success in graduating from high school. What we now know, both from the abruptness of the pandemic and the closure of schools, and what we know from the other glaring social justice types of not just disparities, but just really evidence of systemic racism, is that if we don't figure out how to eliminate the digital divide that our families are experiencing in this community, such that this move to some part, if not all part, distance learning with an expectation of engaging parents and families in the learning of our students, we're going to see a huge exacerbation of an already big problem with respect to disparities in all of the K-12 continuum, if you will. But we also know that to say that and to come up with the strategies we, through really good work, came up with pre the pandemic, that we're really talking about still incremental, because we got to address the social justice issues that have presented themselves in this situation in Minnesota that then not only focuses on criminal justice issues, but all of the systemic evidence of how racism intentionally divides who can be successful and who can't. Our young people, I heard a young lady on WUWM, NPR, the other day say, and I don't even remember where she was from, but she said, "What have we got to lose?" And that's what I think our young people are needing, is the ability to channel what they know they need and want and they're demanding into such a way that they get it. And what our job as seasoned adults is to figure out how to be good with that, to infuse our work in a social justice framework, and to be much more inclusive in how we hand over power to young people based upon what they say they need in order to be successful at life. I think that changes the dynamics of how we do the work that we do, and I think we're pretty excited about the opportunity, because there's just no way to hide away from what is actually going on in many of our communities, including Milwaukee.
That's a great segue. I think, Mark, let's talk a little bit about, because of this COVID-19 crisis, We're looking at a lot of people who are looking to retrain or change careers because COVID-19 may have wiped out entire industries or businesses. So how is UWM addressing these challenges in terms of retraining and career changers who may be coming back to the university for those opportunities?
That's a great point. You know, historically, higher ed has worked inversely with respect to the economic health of society, meaning that as the economy has gone down, education needs demand goes up because people want to reskill and retool. In this particular case, I don't think we'll see an exception to that. But what's different about things now, and I think what our role is to work with employers to look at the specific competencies that are needed in a very short term and deliver those online in a digital way. And I'm not talking about next fall, I'm talking about next month. This is where I think it's critical that we look at our platforms that we have for short courses through our School of Continuing Ed, which is, by the way, having some areas of record enrollment right now. I mean, as you can imagine, there's a lot of individuals. Part of it is around some of the things that might surprise you, but might not. Issues around employee and managerial resilience, emotional intelligence. We're dealing with, as Tim pointed out, workforces where people are afraid. They're concerned about if they are in the workforce, what may happen. If they're not in the workforce, what it's going to be like. So both at the managerial supervisory level as well as employee level, there's a lot of individuals who are not in the workforce today. So how do we give them skills and competencies frankly, when we think about smart manufacturing, we think about the future, issues around data science, machine learning, connectivity, Internet of Things. So working with WEDC on the types of support that they've been able to provide for us to have for small, medium-sized manufacturers, content that's around Internet of Things. So those are some of the examples that are important, as well as, you know, from the nursing side, a lot of people saying mental health and some of our psychology parts of the program, just the issues that we're seeing crop up all over the place. So there's a lot of educational needs, and we want to provide those in a way that's economical, gets the skills needed when and where they can be delivered most effectively.
And Julia and Tim, I want to bring you into this discussion to talk a little bit about the unemployed or the underemployed individuals kind of left in the wake of COVID-19 and how that specifically affects folks who are, you know, in many ways are involved in some of the unrest that we're seeing in Milwaukee. So, Julia, talk about that a little bit, about what the support is there for people who are currently underemployed or unemployed in this community and region.
Yeah, well, and actually, I was just having some discussions with Shantavia Brown, who's the new director of Employ Milwaukee, the new president there, because, you know, you think about trying to do outreach and to do training when it all has to be done virtually. And I think back to Danae's point about the digital divide is a very real thing. Plus, I would say that there's a lot of issues with the systems, you know, trying to get through the unemployment system is it's a major issue. So there was a lot of pain out in the community before the pandemic, and there is even much greater pain after the pandemic. We've been working on trying to connect people up to the healthcare careers and centers, and working on some very specific training programs, including the stackable certificates, as Mark has mentioned. But, you know, this is a difficult time because, one, unemployment is so high. It's, you know, it's at the levels now of the Great Depression, that people that didn't have opportunity before are severely restricted now. I would add one thing, though, that we have done is we've worked a great deal with interns. A number of students, college and high school students, had internships canceled throughout the country, as a matter of fact. And we very quickly put together funding to create an internship program for 100 students that will be running as a virtual internship over the summertime. And for some of these students, it means the difference for them to return to college, the ability for them to pay rent this summer, So we're excited to announce that that's going to start next week. We had over 700 applications with a fairly short turnaround time when we put out the notice.
And Tim, tell me more about how the chamber is reacting to some of these things regarding unemployment and underemployment.
Yeah, I mean, COVID has certainly been disruptive, as I mentioned, you know, knocking 107,000 people out of the workforce. And some of those industries are going to be really slow to come back. The hospitality industry, the travel industry, restaurants, that's just going to be really slow to come back. And some of that is going to be, you know, semi-permanent. And so for those folks that have been disenfranchised from the impact on COVID, they've got to find new ways to reenter the workforce and to train. And we have been matching those companies that have lost or laid off employees with those companies in other industries that are hiring for various reasons on the flip side of COVID, either because they're making PPE or their businesses are strong or the supply chains are returning and they're looking for more people to work. So again, I think the impact of COVID is so damaging because of how quickly it hit, but it is really laying bare some of the infrastructure that needs to be in place to help people kind of retool and retrain, go back to school, get those credentials. Employers are looking for ways that they can train their employees and educate them while they're working. And so I think you're going to see some substantive changes, which Mark is very aware of in terms of the two-year and four-year institutions and how they're going to have to adapt. And I think employers are going to have to start to step up more than they have in the past and maybe become part of that funding gap to put their employees back in short stackable credentials to prepare them for the workforce going forward. So lots of turmoil, but lots of opportunity, I think, for Milwaukee to rebound ahead of some of its peers and address those real issues.
You know, many of the folks that have been affected by the unrest here in Milwaukee and in surrounding communities, they have small businesses or medium-sized businesses. And there are a lot of nonprofits currently that have had to either downsize or stop operating altogether. So, Tim, Julia, if you could address this and talk a little bit about those particular types of businesses that are hit the most hardest, the small businesses, the single entrepreneurs, and the nonprofits. How do you help them rebound from this type of, we could call it disaster?
We've been working so much with so many small businesses and mid-sized businesses over the years with Brew City Match and Scale Up. And we have also a strong partnership out in the community of groups like WBIC, other community-based financial institutions, the minority chambers as well, that there's actually a good outreach and a good network here. The key has been trying to get resources into that network. So we've worked with WEDC with some of the $2,500 grants that have come up. Where Danae's at in Milwaukee Succeeds with Greater Milwaukee Foundation has been great about providing grants, which have been, been very helpful to these small businesses. But we've also, you know, been having, as we call it, office hours with some of the small businesses. And, you know, part of it is trying to figure out if you can't move forward, you know, how do you close your business? How do you get out of this where you're not wrecking economic hardship for you and your family long term? I think on the nonprofit side, I give a lot of credit to Greater Milwaukee Foundation, the Bader Foundation, and Zilber that have really stepped up, United Way as well, to work with some of the nonprofits that are getting called on. They have great needs right now by the community, but are really struggling with their resources. And as I mentioned, we've been working a lot with the community engagement groups. So we've been providing micro tech grants and doing a lot of training on things like basic Zoom licenses, broadcast texting and what's called text hustle and different ways of communicating that are actually broadening their reach. But it's a very, very new and very, very fast learning curve.
You know, as we in the last few minutes of the program, I think one thing that's people really want to know is what steps your organizations are taking to safely reopen Milwaukee and the M7 region. And Tim, let's talk with you first about the business community and what your steps you're taking.
Sure. As you know, companies have moved through the crisis to recovery and now the new normal. We've been working from the beginning. And I think if you just bring it forward right now, because it's the most salient part of the discussion, we have a business toolkit that companies are using to reopen, to restart their businesses. So it's a series of best practices that companies can learn from one another in terms of bringing their employees back to work, making sure the workplace is clean, and then instilling confidence in their customers that their workplaces are up to speed, access to PPE equipment. And again, as we think about this, this is going to run for some period of time. And while Safer at Home is basically rolled back for most communities, I don't see most employers really bringing back the bulk of their workforce till the early fall.
And Mark, what about with UWM?
I'll tell you in a nutshell, we're using a framework called, this will roll right off your tongue, TTSIP. And what that is about is the testing and tracing. We're trying to develop the right protocol for that. And then issues around separation, isolation, and protection. And much like what Tim talked about, we need to have first and foremost safety in the educational environment, whether that's on the residential and dining side, or whether that's in the classroom, research labs, and other areas. So protocol around social distancing, we're going to be requiring people that are back on campus to have masks, regular training and communication about hand washing, the sanitizing of classrooms and buildings. So that whole area is really critically important. We're working on the phasing in of how we bring things back. As you know, right now, we're almost exclusively online. We've got minimal work happening on the research front, but we've got to bring all that back online effectively, safely, and critically important for the vitality and continued education for all.
Thank you. Danae, can you quickly tell us more how Milwaukee Succeeds will plan to open back up?
Put it bluntly, workforce can't go back to work if childcare is not available, affordable, quality, and as needed for workers to be able to go back to work. So our focus has been on helping that sector remain viable, remain stable, and to grow it. The need is there. There's lots of good providers out there, and we've got to make sure that they're able to be viable in the very near future as workforce goes back to work.
Thank you. And Julia, quickly, how does GMC look to reopen or look to help businesses and individual organizations reopen?
Well, we've been sharing a lot of information through our networks to send the Bruce City Match as well as the Scale Up and Spark companies about what are safe practices, what are some best practices that are out there, areas of access to PPE as well as other equipment that they need to reopen. But also, as Tim was saying, this is going to go for a while.
That's a great sentiment to end on. Our guests today on the Chancellor's Report have been Mark Monet, Chancellor at UW-Milwaukee, Danae Davis, Executive Director of the Milwaukee Succeeds, Tim Sheehy, the President of the Metropolitan Milwaukee Association of Commerce, and Julia Taylor, President of the Greater Milwaukee Committee. I'm WUWM's General Manager, John Hess. Thank you for listening.
You've been listening to The Chancellor's Report, featuring Mark Monet, Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. If you'd like more information, go to uwm.edu/chancellor.